welcome back to this week's MVP Real Estate Podcast. We're calling this one the Leadership Conference. I'm going to self-proclaim that one because we've got Dan, co-host, helping on MVP Rentals. And then we got our foreman here for MVP Renovations, Justin Jerry Dolman. People get confused. His real name is Justin, but forever call him Jerry just because. Up on so the welcome Jerry to the trend. Show, Jer. Stairs Thank by you. Jer. How's it going Friday morning?
Wait, what's going? What season, Friday what episode morning? Is this? I don't remember.
Season 3, episode 8.
Oh, that's right. That's
My
right.
bad.
Thanks for reminding me.
The one and only time I'll remind you. Jerry, how's it going? Thanks for filling in today.
Good. Yeah, finally.
We've been talking about getting this show going for months now, and it's finally here. So I'm excited about that one.
Yes, and it worked. Timing-wise, worked out pretty well. So
I know. It's great. But yeah, for everybody listening, these are the two guys, like the brains behind the operation on whatever brand you're talking about. Jerry came from like a long history of building, but kind of give us a 2 minute or like a minute kind of summary of where Jerry came from, maybe like the educational background, your first job, and then what progressed you to join in with MVP Renovations.
Yeah. So kind of for a short, went to basically grew up in Cedarburg, went to Cedarburg High School. My first job, this has nothing to do with building, was a sanitation delivery driver. So I pumped out porta potties at county fairs and delivered porta potties all over southwestern Wisconsin. So that was my first job. But leading in after high school, I went to UW Oshkosh, got my degree in criminal justice and military leadership. I did ROTC through college and thought I was going to go military, and then also thought I was going to be a police officer. And at the end of college, kind of had a little change in heart, saw my dad's practical skills. He was a carpenter for 15 years, and kind of figured out that, hey, there is, you know, another total trajectory that I didn't even consider, which was building. So I kind of went backwards through the normal building realm, for lack of a better term. I started by doing custom furniture and cabinetry in like a one-off like cabinetry shop. We did a lot of tables, kitchen cabinets, built-ins, accent walls, mantles, all sorts of stuff like that. And from there I went on and joined into residential framing, just strictly stick framing. So built for a pretty large company in southwestern Wisconsin and did that for about 4.5 years, and got to the point where the winters started to catch up to me a little bit and I started getting a little bit older. And that job was, you know, it's not a young man's game. I can't say that, because a lot of the most metal dudes I've ever worked with were older than me, but it started to take a toll a little bit. So once I kind of was over that, Marcus appeared out of nowhere in like divine intervention of realizing that I wanted to be done with framing. And yeah. And basically you kind of gave me a little synopsis of the company you do it, like what you guys do at breakfast, and slowly started reeling me in. And
yeah. I just had to do the breakfast hungover. So you're a little bit lower in your brain power, and I could convince you that this is the answer. But yeah, it was one day at brunch, and it was a mutual friend. We got together, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you're in building. I didn't actually know you were a carpenter at the time.
Yeah.
So when we went to lunch, it was super cool. I think you were still on crutches.
Yeah.
Or were you off of crutches at that
point? I was just off of crutches.
Just yeah. off of crutches. Framing nail accident.
Yeah.
But that's how we got the ball rolling of like, okay, you're a builder, I'm in building. And I'm sitting at this brunch like, okay, I just got into this. Like, I just started the company. We've done a couple flips, but I'm still learning. And I'm talking to you, who has years of experience on me. And I'm like, man, this guy's got the energy. Like he's funny, yet your military background comes out because you're disciplined. And I was like, this is the guy that I could like set free. He can just go on the job site and get everything done better than I can do it. Like he's a key person.
Yeah.
And luckily the timing worked out where you were kind of on your way out or thinking about your way out. So I was happy with how it turned out.
And it was a small, and for the record too, just for anybody listening, I was never in the military.
Right.
Never signed. I just did ROTC through college, thought that was going to be my path. But the small world about this whole thing, though, is after we had this conversation, I was literally building a house probably 10 houses down from Marcus's house this yeah. entire time. I would park on Marcus's road. Before I even knew Marcus, I would park on his road and see his house every day going through the renovations and stuff like that, and had obviously no idea that was going to be my future boss. So it was kind of funny how that all came full circle, because once we finished up building at that house, then we would slowly, you know, start, oh, I'm going to go to Marcus's for a drink and talk about work. And yeah, it worked out pretty freaking good. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still enjoying it. And I know that one of the things that you want to do, obviously being a framing crew, you guys work with a lot of systems. And I mean, that's what you guys are good at, is you have numbers, meaning like manpower, and your systems are refined. Everybody knows what they're doing. You could pump through houses quickly. And what I kind of illustrated to Jerry before he jumped on was I was able to take a football and go in the backyard and throw it around with a couple guys. But we didn't have systems in place. We didn't have like best practices on when we do this application, this is how we do it. Then Jerry came and was like, all right, I'm going to take all my background and pick up where you left off and make it way, way better. Like our warehousing has come better. Our tools have upgraded. Our storage has upgraded. We're getting quicker on jobs. Like everything is getting better. We just need more heads in the leadership area. So, man, it's been amazing. It's been a wild ride since you started.
Oh, man. Yeah, it has.
Because the first day was like, all right, I know you've done framing for 6 years, but we're mudding today. And you're like, okay, we'll mud. Yeah. Sounds good.
But I'm a firm believer in even if you don't fully, like, you know, mudding, for instance, I came from the carpentry background. That wasn't a comfortable spot for me. But you can do enough research to know what boxes you need to check throughout the building process to basically be able to do anything. Like I used to be terrified of side work. And then once we built Menominee Falls, you know, I've built probably on the upside of 70 houses, but that was my first house on my own. And that one was like, oh, wow. Like all this critical thinking is finally coming into one thing. And it was crazy how much stuff, I'd never insulated an entire house, but you can watch enough informational videos, figure out that it's actually pretty easy. It's not fun, yeah. But it's easy.
Yep. And we were just, I bought Miles, my son, a Crunch Labs. If you haven't looked into it yet, parents, if you got young kids, this Crunch Lab, it's a guy who was working for NASA and then stopped and just made this big toy factory. And all he does is make interactive toys for kids. And then he'll send you a box that you build and you put this video up on the TV and it's him building it with you. But then he explains the principles behind the toy and how it works. So we were building this Frisbee launcher. And it comes with like the battery that you have to hook in and then tape to the bottom of the board, put all these other pieces on. And the one thing that he said in the beginning was like, it's more important to learn the principles than what you're actually doing. And just like with Jerry, with all of your background, you've learned so many principles that you're like, okay, as long as I can get back to the basics, I can figure out the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's led you to evolve into all the other things we do, because we've done what now? Landscaping, insulation, money.
I mean, everything. I don't think there yet has been something that we necessarily haven't done.
We poured a driveway just because, like, why not? Let's see what we can do.
That's one that constantly I forget about. That was probably one of the most mental days of just like, wow, well, we're doing flat work. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Made work though.
Yeah. And so as you're growing up, so I'm going to take you out of the company. Let's just find out Jerry's background. Like, were you, as a kid, were you a person that would always try to like mess with things? Not in like, I'm going to break it, but like tinkering. So, I was always a tinkering kid. I'd pick up something, I'd like take it apart and see if I could put it back together.
So one big credit I can give to my parents, both of them, and my dad. When I was a kid, his big thing, like if an alarm clock burned out or something like that, he'd sit me at the kitchen table. And I was, you know, anywhere between five to, I did this probably well until I was 13 years old. If something of his broke that he knew was rendered useless, it couldn't be fixed, he would let me dismantle it and see how it worked on the inside. So I specifically remember taking apart alarm clocks and dad explaining to me, like, you know, kind of the basic process of this is plugged into the wall, this is where the power comes in, this is what lights the screen. And if he were sitting here today, he'd tell you he gave me one of their old family cameras that broke down, whatever. And he's like, take it apart. And I pry the housing apart and I'm looking at the inside of this camera and it looks like two AA batteries with two wires coming out of them. Well, it was the flash capacitor. It's where all the power is stored for the flash. And I had a pair of uninsulated snips that he gave me. And my dad, well, his iteration of this story is hilarious because I was like six and he gives me the camera. He goes in, sits on his recliner, is watching TV. And all he just heard was this like, whoop, like this like electrical sound. And he said, I walked into the living room with my hands straight out because I had never been shocked before in my life. Walked in like a zombie and was like, why did you scare me so bad? Why did you scare me so bad? I had no idea what happened. But like that, just that kind of stuff, like even that at a very early age, I realized not to cut wires because I got like full tilt zapped by that. And it scared me as a kid. But most of it was, you know, my dad, they were constantly showing me stuff. You know, my dad as a kid, as much as it might have got under my skin, you know, if I was playing video games, he wouldn't. Like he'd make me come out during keynote points of what he's doing. Oil. I probably knew how to do a full oil change on a car when I was 10 because I had watched him do it hundreds of times. He did all the maintenance on the vehicles himself. And all that stuff didn't start to coalesce until I was a little bit older. I didn't appreciate it as much. I think because in high school, it was so driven into my head that you couldn't be successful without college. And you know, there was no emphasis on the trades and stuff like that. But, you know, my parents just were like, you choose your route, we'll support you. But my dad definitely was dropping in like, hey, look at how functional a set of skills like this can be. So that's where a lot of it came from.
And you bring up your dad, I mean, weekly on the job site about some little nugget of knowledge he dropped on you or like directly within building, like he's taught you how to do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. And you know, his quote was, Justin, make yourself as marketable as possible. He says, you are a walking resume. He goes, you know, yes, things on paper look good, but you can also have real world skills. Not that stuff that's on paper per se aren't real world skills, but saying that, like, you know, yes, you can have a degree in criminal justice, but you can also know how to hang a door.
Right.
And stuff like that, like practical, you know, around the house stuff that he had to do. He learned like, so.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that is just an era mindset or if the kids nowadays are going to grow into that. Cause I fear like that's not a concept in people's heads. Like, oh, I'm an accountant. I don't know how to paint. It's like you painted in third grade art class.
Yeah.
You figure out how to paint. It's just painting. What's up, Pancake?
This Pancake, sorry. He didn't get an invite to the meeting.
But that thought of like, okay, I'm an accountant. I can't do gardening, or I can't figure out how to change a light. Like the amount of knowledge that's out there on YouTube, if you're an accountant, you can figure that out. Yes, it might be difficult. Yes, you might struggle a little bit, but you can figure it out.
And really the biggest separator is just access to the basic tools. If you sit by yourself a basic set of tools, you can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like DeWalt.
Yeah, baby, until I die.
We have an ongoing battle because the company is more Milwaukee tool, but Jerry will not give up the DeWalt tools.
Nope. It's the best cordless framing saw on the market. If anybody wants to challenge me on that, let's go rip some boards.
I'm not challenging you with tools. I take tool recommendations from you all the time. So with your background, obviously you worked your way up through the trades field, being in like a basic laborer position to now being a person in management. And I would say management within construction is a little bit different than like a full out office setting, HR run kind of facility. So what have you taken from your past, either your past managers or foremans, and tried to implement here? Because just to give the audience a full like scope, Jerry gets pretty much full autonomy to run the crew with how he wants to. So when I come on site, I'm one of his laborers, because it's really weird. Because when I come on site, I'm actually behind the eight ball. Like Jerry knows what's going on. I have to come in and be like, hey, where did we leave off? Where is this? I don't know. So what have you taken from your past to now run and move your crew to the right position? Because you've got keeping up with plans that we have, keeping them on task and finishing your own stuff. So it's a tall order.
Yeah. I think there's really big three points for me. You know, the first one is I want the guys that work with me to basically manage themselves in a sense of like, you are responsible for the work you do. You know, if you turn out in some subpar work, that's not my fault. Part of my fault would be, you know, I have to teach you properly. I have to teach you the methods. And my big mantra is that everybody does it the same way. I am 100% open if there's a faster, better way to do something. But as of now, like you were talking, the process that I've implemented has come from years of seeing other people's processes and basically trimming fat in certain spots, figuring out what works for me, what's going to work for the guys that don't have experience. And that's the big one, is just as I tell the guys, and you've heard it, Marcus, is craftsmanship should remain constant. Craftsmanship, you should always have a deadpan plateau level of your bare minimum craftsmanship. You should always be proud, no matter what you're doing, of what you're turning out, because you're putting your name on it. That is what you are representing, is your work. And speed comes with time. And in that bell curve kind of is the second point, which I pulled from other management that I didn't necessarily know was why they might be a little bit more, I don't know what the word is, nervous on job site, was making cautious. Sure people didn't get hurt. That came whirlwind at Menominee Falls, because if anybody has used a framing gun, you know, it's an air powered pneumatic framing nailer, and it shoots a 3 1/4 inch 18 gauge nail, and
very fast.
Yeah, I shot one into my thigh my second week of framing and had to have full surgery to get it removed. It hangs on my Christmas tree. But
was the safety removed on that one?
No. Nope.
It had both safeties, trigger and pressure safety.
Oh no, we everybody removes the single fire shot.
If OSHA's listening, that's not a thing here at MVP. We don't do that at MVP.
Yeah.
Not if OSHA's listening.
True. Well, no. OSHA can kick rocks because that they send you the double, they send you the bump fire trigger in the box. Like, it's not like we're manufacturing some sketchy trigger for the framing guns.
Hold on, I just got an email from OSHA. Let me check, see what that is.
yeah, listening. With a wanted. Yeah, it's my face and a wanted letter. But man. That whole thing, though, is like basically when people are using those tools, they are also accountable for their safety, you know, and that's the thing I just try to day in and day out. And even if it's telling them stories that are pretty gruesome of injuries I've seen, that scares people out. It gives them a whole different respect for the tools they're using. So that was a big one, is I realized why my foremans were always pressing safety, because in this line of work, it is very easily to get seriously injured and or killed. And, you know, we take safety extremely seriously on the job site, and all the guys are very aware. And, you know, that was a big one for me, was the framing guns with the guys, because a lot of the guys hadn't used them. You know, two of the guys are hunters, so, you know, they have basic firearms knowledge and finger off the trigger and all that stuff. But and then really the third one was to, I project, my mood projects on how the site is going to be. So really trying to leave stuff at the door, trying to harbor a really good work environment for the guys. It's a lot of fun. There's always music going. That was a big thing. I've worked with people in the past that just yell to yell because they can. And that doesn't invoke hard work. That just starts to invoke you resenting this person because they can never realize when you're doing good. Like, you know, being very supportive and stuff to the guys is a big thing because, like I said, speed comes with time, and they're right now starting to hold this craftsmanship level. So
you're like, exactly what you're saying is how I'm like pivoting my coaching. I coach club soccer, and exactly what you said, as far as like, I'm not saying my dad was tough, but it was just like, do this because I said so, this is the right way, this is why you should do this, blah blah blah. It led me to grow up being a questioning stuff, like not in a negative sense, but just like, hey, why do we do this way? Why? So then when you just said, like, it resonated really well, because I think you can get more out of people or more production out of people, like with the compliments or the encouragement, or hey, nice job on that, can we try to do this next time, or how about we try this instead? Or so it's like, instead of saying, no, that's wrong, what is wrong with you, blah blah blah, and it's like, yeah. So like, I'm going through some those coaches courses, and like, obviously in a leadership role, you have to have those type of qualities too. And then obviously servant leadership is something big too, like you're there for them.
Yep.
No other reason.
Yep.
You obviously want them to be better than you are.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play soccer on any organized level since seven or eight years old, but here I am coaching it, and it's only because, you know, my oldest daughter, who's 21, and then now my 9-year-old enjoyed the game, and it obviously has to have me learn some stuff to be able to coach them and their teammates. But anyway, sorry, little tangent.
No, that leadership, that leadership and coaching, that leadership on the job site parallels super well, because the first thing I told Jerry is, like, I don't want to look for people that have been in the field for 10 years, 20 years. Like, those may not be our guys. I want energy. Like, I want the person to want to work. Like, they can't just be a roofer or just be a sider or just be a carpenter, because with our management side, like, we're going to have sinks going down and you're going to have to step in and replace a sink. And if you don't mentally want to replace a sink or to learn how to even do that, this is not going to be a good fit. Not saying you aren't good at your craft.
Yeah.
Like, you might be an amazing carpenter, better than anybody we have on the crew. But if you're not willing to learn other things and expand your knowledge pool, you don't have to be an expert at carpet. Yeah. But like, if we have one room that needs to replace carpet, I don't want to have to go wait for a sub to come in just to replace one little piece. Like, if we know the basics of flooring, we can do carpet, and we've worked on seams. We've gotten better. We're not a carpet company. If someone called for a quote for us to install their carpet, I would pass them on to our sub that we use.
Yeah.
Because he's just better.
Yeah. Well, that's what he does day in and day out. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that whole thing, though, of me projecting my mood onto the guys, you know, that's probably the single most important thing for me, is to have a sustainable work environment. Yeah. Like, they and you know, I don't want this to sound egotistical, but you know, I know the guys respect me at a level because I treat them like adults. They're not these servants that run around, you know. To your point, Dan, I've even at the beginning, the hard thing for me was, and I've stressed it to you, Marcus, is, you know, there are days where I'm like, what did I get done today? You know, I walked around with everybody else and helped them on their projects. And you a couple times had to bring me back down, and we're like, you did your job. Like, that's you did that. Where you're basically honing four other guys to work at your level. So you trained today, you know, and then in the back of my head, because of just how I'm wired and from the past 4.5 years of framing, you know, if you didn't stop, if you stopped moving while you were framing, you were getting yelled at. Somebody was on you. Like, if you weren't staying busy, somebody was on you. And you know what? That, I think, to a degree, work ethic is kind of, you have it or you don't. But that taught me my work pace. I don't think my pace of work will ever change from that, because it was like classic conditioning, basically. I knew if I stopped moving, I was going to get yelled at. And, you know, there were other guys that I worked with that just yelled to yell. And I view that as a tool. I think I've yelled twice, three times maybe, in the 2.5 years we've been with you. And, you know, that's when it's effective, because it's for somebody's safety, or it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just the small stuff. And that's the big thing for me, is it's just, I remember I could tell how my day was going to go by the way my foreman got out of his truck. Like, the attitude with which he put his hard hat on dictated how my day was going to go. And that was wild to me, is because I was like, how is this guy having a bad day going to affect me? Because now I'm afraid to ask him questions. So what am I not working at my fullest potential? Like, that is so backwards on how things should be worked. I never want anybody to be afraid to be like, hey, Jerry, can you spare, not spare, like, it's not like this, I have this bag of time that I get to allot to the guys. Like, hey, can you come answer this question or look at it for me? And, you know, the guys have gotten so much better, and where they're at now is, I'll tell them, is, I trust your judgment. When you're done, let me know, and we'll talk it over.
Yeah.
Like, go, you know, I trust you. I trust when you're doing trim work. If you come to a weird spot, think about what you would put in your house that you'd want to see every day.
Yeah.
And that also builds their confidence, their problem solving, and it makes them feel more independent during the working process, which makes my job easier.
Yeah. And that's the biggest part. And that's something I told you from like day one, when we were building, like when we were doing our flips before you jumped on board, and people came to me asking questions. One, like, I'm in the beginning of this too, so I'm not going to fake confidence. Like, I know the answer. So if you come up on a problem and they're like, hey, can you come over? I want to know what you want to do here. The first thing when I go up there is like, okay, what are our options?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you see? What are our three options? And they lay out the three options. I'm like, okay, which in your head, which one is your top one and why? And then they'd walk through and they're like, okay, well, I was going to do this because that leads to this. And then I would say like, okay, well, if you put that casing on, what does it do for this part?
Yeah.
Or if you overlap there, what would the reveal be? Or what would the finished product be? And then you'd run into the issue there. So you got to back up. But I'm not giving them an answer. I'm having them think out the next steps. And then they'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to do it this way. Perfect.
Yeah. And it's that basically way, like a word problem.
Yeah. It basically is. But I wanted to teach them that, like, you know the answers. There's three answers and you know the three. You got to figure out which one is the best one. That's not for me to tell you. Yeah. Like, I'll be there helping you. It's the same thing with Miles, my son's homework. Like, okay, read the word problem and you got to
figure out. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if I know. The teacher wants to know if you know.
Yeah.
But then that helps the second time through it. They've been through it once. They figured it out themselves. And then it's less and less questions. And it's more and more confidence for them, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. It invokes people wanting to come to work.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the thing is we also reward hard work with, if somebody wants a day off, they've earned it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can enjoy a Friday off because you were full throttle through the week. And that, once again, like, it makes people want to come into work. Getting yelled at every day, that was probably a catalyst into me wanting to find something new because I was sick of it. Like, yeah. It's nothing, not a knock against the dude that did it. It's just that's how I realized I didn't want to be managed. You know, I'm not a parent, but I've heard people say, oh, well, my mom and dad were like this. I grew up with, I don't want to treat my kids like that. Basically, that my old foremans were like parents and I'm the child now with my own kids. And I'm like, well, no, we're going to do this a lot differently. I'm going to make this a work environment that you guys want to come and you're laying in bed that night, thinking about what you're going to do the next day, excited to get at it. You got a new tool to use. You're doing a new, whatever it is. That's where you really start building starts to prosper. When people really start to realize their full potential and that their mind is the biggest thing holding them back.
Yeah. And I think we've cultivated a good, like you said, we do have some pains. We do have some conflicts. Like, it's not perfect, but
no,
like when we do a flip and we're turning over a rental or turning over a flipped house, we always have like one piece where like everybody gets to put some input in. Like, okay, mm-hmm. In the kitchen, what are we gonna do for the backsplash? Like, what are some options we can throw out? What paint colors should we put in? Give everybody a say of what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Because if they have buy-in and they actually like it internally, like they have some say in the overall plan, like there's just more buy-in. There's more incentive to want to be there. The one thing that when I was going through employers, I'll call it, when I hit my mental, like I'm just checked out and I have to go to work tomorrow, like I knew it was done. I'm not going to give the extra effort. I'm not going to go the extra foot to try and get the job done. I'm going to clock out and go home. And I just don't want that here. So like the most we can do to incentivize them to want to be here, you're going to lessen those conflicts of, I just don't want to do that route because it's more work and it's more time.
Yep.
Then we're in it for the wrong reasons.
Yep.
So we go in with like that learning mentality plus all of the new guys that we've hired have been relatively new. One had done some roofing, some framing. One has done some property management. One is completely green, just in a sales role. So we do have a lot of people learning new skills. And the last thing we can do is jump down their throats for doing it wrong.
No, because it's patience. And that's one thing that I would say if somebody were to ask me, like, what is your keystone attribute? I would say my patience is pretty high. I have an ability to just like it not bother me. Stuff happens on the job. Stuff breaks. You know, we're getting ready to install a counter and it dropped and it broke, but you divide and conquer and figure out how to overcome it. Me standing there and screaming, that's not going to solve it.
Yeah.
But walking up to that and, hey, what are you going to do differently next time we carry a counter? Yeah. They can police themselves. Their brains can police themselves. Yeah. I don't need to make you feel like a child. You already have that sinking feeling in your stomach that you screwed up. I don't need to drive that home. Yeah. You're an adult. You know what I mean? That's kind of the mantra I have. And it has worked out. It really has. It's caused a, like, it's like a little family at work, which is awesome in 2 years that we've come that far.
Yep. And for me to see where it started to where it is now is like kind of crazy to look at. Cause like I come on site and it seems like you guys have been friends since childhood, which is super cool.
Well, one has.
Yeah. And that's the cool part. Like if you can go, you make money, you work with your friends, mm-hmm. like talk about a good work environment. And that's what we're trying to keep going.
Yep.
So we'll see what the future holds on that one. We're gearing up for another new build in Whitefish Bay, which it's going to be kind of a new, I would say a new chapter for the company. Cause usually we take it from start to finish, whatever needs to be done. Yep. And we sub out what we need. This one, we're kind of inverting the tables and we are strictly on finish work. So all the other exteriors and rough framing is subbed out. We are going to come in the last step and just finish the place. So what are, as we go into this project, what is your like focus or what are you anticipating? What are you looking forward to within that project?
Oh, well, I guess it'd be, you know, kind of new role for me in that sense. I mean, my role remains the same, but, you know, basically a little bit more project management, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
Because, as Marcus said, that the lot lines in Whitefish Bay, it's a very, very tight build. And, I mean, you're talking 10 feet to the next house.
Yeah.
And if anybody has ever built a house, especially a two-story house, that close to other your neighbors on each side, you have to make sure all the boxes are checked on the safety side. Cause if you let a wall go into somebody's driveway, you got to dismantle a wall in somebody's driveway. But that being said, you know, I'm also excited because working with other pro tradesmen makes me a better tradesman. So I also am really excited to watch a well-oiled siding crew. You know, I've watched most of them. I've watched more of that stuff since I've been with you, because when I was framing, it was we'd hang doors and windows and we were out onto the next one, show up, empty foundation, build a new house, doors, windows, onto the next. We rarely get to see the other guys work. And so that's what I'm excited for, is to kind of get in there and get in the know about, hey, why are you guys doing this? Why are you using these materials? And, you know, that's also the other thing too, is staying in touch with other people of, you know, what materials are we using? You know, where can we save time? Where do you guys need help from our crew? So yeah, that's going to be a big one. You know, like I said, in the past 2 years, man, the upward trajectory that's crazy. But
yeah, it's been fun.
It's crazy what you get when you get people that are motivated to do some stuff. So,
yeah. And you just mentioned something and I wanted to ask you, because a lot of people listening to the show, they may not be contractors. They may not be in building, but they may be doing a bathroom remodel or they're landscaping or getting their siding redone. So from you being in the industry in just one little section of just rough framing, and now your sphere has gotten bigger and now you're looking at more of the whole picture.
Yeah.
So as you watch these crews, as you talk to other subcontractors, what are some like green lights, red lights, questions you ask or things you've learned from these subcontractors that you, if a friend would ask you like, hey, I'm getting my siding redone, what should I watch out for? Or what should I look for in a contractor? Yeah. What are some things you've found as now your scope has changed that you'd focus in on?
I'd say a big one for me, for the your average homeowner, you know, prefers to sub stuff out, is how open they are to questions. Even if you are not incredibly knowledgeable on the subject. You should be asking questions. You should be knowledgeable on what you're getting done, if that makes sense. Let's say you're getting a new garage door. Sit down for 15 minutes and read up on how a garage door opener works, the cables, the tensioner, just so you have a ballpark of, like, you know, if you were to go into a job interview, a sit down formal job interview, you know, I always remember it was like, ask questions about the company, get to know the company. How are you going to ask questions about the company when you did no research on the company? And I'm not saying the company that's going to install your garage door, but it's like, if you are able to ask questions that are directly related to what they're doing, even if it's kind of filler, to be honest with you, you can judge somebody's attitude very quickly on if they're there to take advantage of you or if they're there to help you. And unfortunately, you know, there are people out there that do take advantage. And for me, my biggest number one vetting is how open they are to questions. If they feel like the information I bring to the table is a secret thing and you can't be in on it, I could go on YouTube and figure out how to hang a garage door and never have to call you back. That's, you know what I mean? That's not everybody. But if somebody feels and are making you feel like you are, you don't need to know. It's your house. It's your money. You 100% need to be in the know.
Yeah.
Like that's a huge one for me. Even, and we've had it in the past when people, other subs come through and stuff, and it's like, they almost see, they get this like weird, put a wall up of like, well, you hired me. Why would I have to tell you why I'm doing this?
Yeah.
Like, well, that you just covered it in your first sentence. I hired you. Like, this isn't, don't get this mixed up. Like, you know,
I think by having the knowledge on, or like a base knowledge on what you're having done, like you said, it protects you from being taken advantage of. Because this person's gonna be like, okay, they know enough where I'm not gonna be able to slip in. Well, I had to go buy this part, or I had to, you know, remount it this way, and that's going to cost you an extra $150 because of the labor or whatever. And it's just like, well, no, you didn't need to do that because you could have done this, or how about we avoid that? So yes, you're hiring somebody out. You are essentially their boss for this job.
Yep.
And you want it done right. You don't want to be taken advantage of. So doing your due diligence before you hire somebody basically protects you from being further taken advantage of. You don't just blindly, hey, here's 100% of the job check.
Yep.
See you in 4 weeks, and then they never show up.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's massive. That's, and unfortunately, that is a very real thing. And, you know, it's odd when you, it's not your realm. Like, you know, going to, you know, I'm pretty well versed in, you know, working on my car and truck and doing that stuff. But, you know, one thing that I was taught was, if you feel like you're being taken advantage of at the mechanic shop, for instances, oh, well, your tensioner pulley broke. Well, can I see the tensioner pulley? You know what I mean? It's like, well, no, it's in the back. What do you mean? I own that tensioner pulley. Like, I want to see it. Show me where it's defective, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
And it's that same mantra carries over into homeownership, because there are people out there that have gotten away with basically a customer that is unknowledgeable. So they're able to do stuff that maybe normally they wouldn't be able to do. And I don't want to scare people out of hiring subs. There's a lot of awesome people out there that want to help and want to do that stuff. And my number one go-to is how willing they are to answer questions and inform you on their process. Everything is like total transparency on what they're going to do.
Yep.
That is humongous.
Yeah.
That is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Right. And out
transparency is huge. When we don't do many jobs for unowned, like our own properties, but we have done some for clients. And like my quote, I base like, here's material, here's labor costs.
Yep.
Like, you know exactly what we're putting into it. This is how long it's going to be. If everything goes right, obviously it's not a science, like a perfect science where we know that the minute we're going to end. But I mean, with what you want to put in, here is your allowance for the labor it's going to cost. Here is your allowance. That's the quote. In when I was building, like the first new build that we did, the rough framer that I hired on to do this job got it because he gave me his quote and he's like, hey, this is what I can do it as. I know you're probably shopping around. I would advise you to shop around, like go get three other builders to do this. And for him to say that to me, I was like, all right, this guy has nothing to hide. He's good. Yep. He's not buffing up his price and think he's going to lose on price. He knows what he can do. He knows what his price is going to be. He got the job. The other ones that were like, well, if you sign right now, I can knock $3,000 off. I'm like, I want to be out of here as fast as I possibly can. Cause like you're now charging me $3,000 if I don't decide right now. That kind of seems shitty to me. Sorry for my language.
No,
if it's in the car. it didn't seem right. And those are ones that are going to lose. And I've interviewed with companies that have, they do the hard sale. Like you need to get the yes or no before you leave the door. And if you leave the door, it's not your account anymore. The next salesman in will get it. And I was like, this, that world is just, it's not real. That's not real life.
Nope. And you really too, when you're coming into the choice of using a contractor, once again, I said it before is, you know, I'm the embodiment of my work. If I have a bad attitude, you can picture what my work might be. You know what I mean? You're in the trades. Your name is all you have. The second you don't put everything you have into a project just because it might seem, you know, on the micro scale, that's when you shoot yourself in the foot, because then people talk, because the biggest thing in this line of work is recommendations.
Word of mouth.
If you sever off one of those connections, you just potentially lost out on 30 jobs, because it's just this constant web of my aunt wants her basement done. Oh, well, that aunt wants, you know, like it's endless. Yeah. And, you know, another just quick touching point too is realize that, especially when it comes to bathrooms, that when you're getting quoted, they're not trying to take advantage of you. A lot of that money comes from, think about when your house is built, if it's lath and plaster, what you want done. A lot of those high quotes when it comes to bathrooms is liability on the company's side of, like, that has to be high moisture environment, water, and it's generally dark. You got to make sure everything is good there, because I've had people hit me up and I am always open to reviewing people's quotes for work, even if I'm not doing them, because they're like, hey, you've quoted, you've been part of the quoting process. Am I being taken advantage of here? And a lot of the times the number that they're seeing is like, technically, no. Yeah. Like what's the corny saying? Good work ain't cheap and cheap work ain't good.
Yeah.
There are times where you just kind of need to bite the bullet, for lack of a better term. And sometimes, most times, the cheap option isn't the best option.
Yeah.
And it's,
my brother actually just got a deck quote back. They want a deck built in their house, and it was like upwards of $60,000. And he called me and he was like, I think my wife was going to have a heart attack. And they were doing all the sales tech, the hard sales and all that stuff. And he was like, yep, we got to think about it, like getting him out the door. And then he called me and he's like, how could it possibly be $60,000? And I go back to that same thing you said. And there was a video on social media that said, it was their closing line. And it was, I can do it good, I can do it fast, or I can do it cheap. You can get two of the three.
Yep.
So like, those are my three things when I get a quote back: material cost, labor cost, and time. Because like, we were just at a job yesterday, and across the street there are roofers. They got the roof torn off and up in a day.
Yeah, in like three car garage.
Yeah. They also had, what would you say, 10, 14 people there?
Yeah. And
so you have to pay those 14 people. So I'm like, okay, Mike, what was the material? How many people are they going to have on site, and how long was it going to take? Because all three of those would factor into it. And it just came back that, like, I don't know how they came up with their material cost, or they pay themselves a very great amount.
Was it gold plated decking?
No, it was a, It was a composite, and it lasted for like 40 years. Mm. Their big thing is this material doesn't get sun damaged. So they've, from 15 years ago or something like that, they keep adding a board every year to see that it doesn't fade. And the product is good. The material is good. But I think they make up their cost in the front end because you'll never have to replace it. So you're pretty much buying your three decks that you'd have to replace over the lifetime in one shot. But they're, I get their concept, but he couldn't swallow and he couldn't rationalize where the numbers came from. And the reason he got so turned off is because when he started asking the questions of like, okay, because he was like, I could use this decking for other applications. Can I buy the decking? And they're like, no, we don't do that. So they were so closed door on everything. And then he was like, this is getting weird. And they're going to pass on that vendor.
So that kind of stuff pisses me off because they're trying to gouge and have their profit margins probably 3x because they can, their selling point is, well, this is going to last you 40, 50 years. That's fine. But like, what is your, obviously you don't have to share what your cost is on this, but you're marking it up 3, 4, 5x.
Yeah.
For just so you can pad your pockets. I mean, like, it doesn't have to be this expensive. If you guys were maybe to drop this, maybe even cut it in half, but like,
well, that's the other thing. They came down like 20 grand with all the incentives. And if they purchased today and if they referred to a neighbor and
just like you said,
okay, this is getting
that shit
ridiculous
about signing now or that stuff about signing now and we'll knock off price. Like, no, then I'm going to go get three other quotes because you guys are, you're padding for patience. Is that, if that makes sense? Like, well, if this person doesn't decide today, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And I could see it if they had 20 people there and it was done in a weekend. They could get the deck built in a weekend, unlimited maintenance on it. Like, I get that whole part. But with the whole question part kind of threw him for a loop.
I had just quick on kind of that and, you know, your brother with the deck. When we moved in, we had a lot of door-to-door salesmen. And I'm sometimes too nice for my own good, and I'll let somebody go through their sales pitch and come back and give me a quote even if I don't know that I want it or whatnot. And it was for basically like a leaf guard company, and he came out and quoted me, and we have 205 feet of gutter on our house, and I just remember walking with him and being like, yeah, I plan on, because at this point I'm like giving him the like, he's, I'm going to let him do his thing. And if it's a reasonable price, we can talk about it because we do have a lot of trees in the front yard. And I started talking because I've hung gutters before. And I'm like, oh, I want to do this, shrink this one up by 3 inches and lift it up so I can eliminate one of the downspouts, make the high side, yada, yada, yada. And I just remember his face. And he just looked at me and goes, have you done gutters before? Because that screwed over his sales pitch. Because he was like, crap, this guy knows that water runs downhill. Everybody should know water runs downhill. Like, once again, to my point of knowing what you're getting quoted on. And I looked through their brochure while he was writing out the quote, and it almost seemed criminal. Every picture was like of an elderly couple.
Oh,
and The old man on the roof and the wife on the ground, and he's fallen off the ladder. And there's
pushing
statistics
life alert.
There's statistics of ladder related incidents in men over 65 years old. And he comes back up the driveway. And at this point, I'm like, I'm really curious to see what this number was. And for 205 feet of gutter on my house, it was like $17,600. And I remember he pulled the pamphlet out and I went, whoa. And he's like, yeah. And once again, to your point, Dan, their marketing scope, their clientele is the elderly.
Fear-based selling. That's all it is. That's terrible.
And I think once he walked up and was like, well, crap, this guy's like 30 years old. Like, I get on my roof with my leaf blower. And yeah, maybe when I'm 65, I might have a change in heart, but like, It was pretty wild, and that number just seems so overinflated for what they were doing.
Yep.
And I think for a lot of the homeowners, they may have the feeling you had in your stomach where like this isn't lining up.
Yeah.
Even for those people that haven't done gutters, they'll still have that feeling. Like my mm-hmm. brother had never done a deck, but he had that feeling. So he called me. And all I would say is like, trust that when you're meeting with them. If it doesn't yeah. pass the sniff test, it probably because it doesn't pass the sniff test.
Yep.
Like there's yep. another contractor out there that you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
And don't discredit them. Like don't bash the company that's sitting at your table. Cause like they have a good product. I'm not gonna diss their product. I'm only mad at their price.
Right. Yeah.
But I'll find somebody else that'll more align with what I'm looking for. And that's really all it is.
That's funny you bring up the story about the leaf gutter people, because I think they were at our house within 3 or 4 months of us moving in.
Yep.
And my wife always makes me answer the door. And
yep.
I mean, I've been doing sales 10, 12 years, however long it's been. And they walk up and I will listen to their pitch, right? And then I'll say, you know what? I'm in sales. I understand like what your tactics are. And then you'll be able to, just like you said, poke holes in what they're trying to do. When you see the pamphlet and it's all elderly people, you're like, okay, you're trying to scare people into this sale. Right. Yep. And then they'll promote, well, we'll give you we'll only charge you for the leaf gutter, but we'll give you gutters for free. Well, yep. the gutters probably cost on 205
pennies feet. On the dollar.
Right. Yep. So, I mean, installing it plus the hangers, and then you'll be protected for X amount. Funny thing is, we moved in, our house had some type of leaf filter. It's like the diamond mesh that's on it.
Yep.
And I had to go pull almost half of it off because it would get clogged because we have pine trees in the back. So they would still fall through anyways.
Yep.
Or you'd have the oak tree with the little helicopters, as the kids
yep.
call them.
Yep.
And I took off a bunch, cleaned out the gutters, I don't know how many times. And then I'm noticing like I need another downspout here. And yeah, it's just I listen to their pitch. And even when, and sometimes when they have good like overcoming objections, like, okay, that was good. I like, obviously you're yeah. not new here.
Yep.
Unfortunately, you're not going to sell me. You're not going to sell me on something I don't need. You're not going to scare me into doing this. And then their first thing is like, we were taught, Marcus, with Snap. Oh, I was just over down the road talking to one of your neighbors. I don't know my neighbors. Like I'm not because I'm yeah. not because I'm rude or like whatever. It's just,
yeah,
we don't engage with our neighbors like that. And we are one of the younger families in this neighborhood. And I think they can go talk to them and be like, well, we're working with this family down here. And that's not going to sell me. That does nothing yeah, for me.
No.
I don't need your product. If I need something, I will go look for it. And I don't know.
And you'll do your due diligence to kind of vet some. And once again, you know, I'm like you said, if that guy was able to answer every one of your questions and you still be like, kind of like, oh crap, like he had an answer for it,
right
that right. also might give you more of like, okay, this guy was open to it. Like I said, once that guy realized that I've hung gutters before, he realized it was done, and
yeah.
his demeanor projected it like incredibly to where yeah. it's just like, hey man, let's just save us both the heartache, like, you know. Yeah.
I did
the
same thing.
It's like he was embarrassed to show yeah. me the price because he knew that it wasn't yep. going to fly. And that's where that whole entire thing comes into play. Make yourself just more knowledgeable than you are when you make the call, when they come to quote you. And that yep. will end up either saving you from losing out on a lot of money, or it'll gain you an awesome product, an awesome finished outcome, because yeah. they realize that this person, they can't take advantage of them.
You can cut yeah. out the awkwardness and the uncomfortableness of the situation too, because here they are trying to sell you and be like, you know what? I'm not, please do not take this wrong or rude. You're doing a great job. Let's, like you said, save each other time. I see that you have your whole sales tactic or pitch well yep. oiled. You know what you're doing. Not interested. We don't have to have the uncomfortableness of me asking you questions just to test you, because I'm not even interested. Let's not waste yep. each other's time.
Yep.
Thank you very much. You can move on to the next one. And half the time they're on some type of like Segway or scooter anyways in this area.
yeah, yeah.
When they roll up my driveway.
When did that start?
Dude, I don't know, but like Kona, I have a big English Mastiff. And when our dog is outside, I do not understand people's thought process where they can just roll up to our front door. and we have a 130-pound, 140-pound mastiff barking in your face. Like, Kona's sweet. She wouldn't hurt anybody. But how does that stop you in your tracks and keep you at the end of the driveway?
They need that sales.
God, right. If I lose an arm or a hand or a foot, it doesn't, I don't know. Jeez.
Yep. It'll be worth it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Segway thing just started out here. I'd never seen that before. Oh. But those are like telecommunications. All those people.
We also had it with, was it pest control?
Pest control. That's the other one.
We had those. And then obviously when you see the True Green or whatever the yard land or fertilizer and all that stuff, when they're come rolling through, you see them stop like ping pong balls down the road. And they're like, okay, here they come. And let Kona outside. Let her out so she doesn't. She's our first line of defense. And if she stops them, if they make it past her, then maybe. But oh, man.
But Jared, like you were saying, if you're going to have somebody over and getting quotes, I mean, put down Instagram for 5 minutes, go to Google and put in the company and put reviews or five questions to ask a roofing company or a gutter company or a drywall company. And there'll be a 5 minute video or a 5 minute read article on Google that gives you very, very high level questions that will at least start the conversation with that salesperson.
Hold on. And, I just had an idea. Why don't we create that?
So there's a show. All right. This was super fascinating on HGTV. And if someone is listening to the show and actually has the right title for the show, let me know. But it's something like Rocco to the Rescue or Ricky to the Rescue, something like that. You're
talking about Homes on Homes?
No, on Homes, baby. Yeah.
He's dude. If I could have him build my house,
dad loves John Holmes.
John Dahlman likes John Holmes.
John Holmes.
No, it's Holmes, Mike Holmes. What are you talking about?
Mike Holmes.
I'm not a true fan, I guess.
He's from Canada, so it's hard to get him down here.
His show is basically the premise of, all right, you're a homeowner, you have a contractor, something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Either with the contractor, like, just ghosting you or project not being done or permitting issues or money issues, they call this guy. He comes in and he is the negotiator between the homeowner, and hopefully they can get the other GC back on, or they've got their own crew that they can come in and finish the project. But he is there to like clean up.
Yeah.
But a lot of what he does is he's the intermediary between either the city and the homeowner, the city and the contractor and the homeowner, that little love triangle. He is right in the middle and he like diffuses and tries to get the project back up and going. I would love to be that person, because like what Jerry was saying, people call him all the time. I had two people yesterday call me and go over quotes that they had gotten. And can you run over, can you read this quote and tell me where I'm on the hook or where I'm most liable? And what are the goods and what do you like about it? So if we could get into that, that would be awesome. Hit I don't up. Know how.
Venmo me $20 and I'll take 15 minutes to look at this quote to tell you if it's good or not. Like, I mean, not that you would do that to your family, but why don't we start creating segments like, hey, I don't know, questions with Jer. Like what, like you said, what are the five things you should look for when asking somebody to redo your bathroom? What are five things you should worry about or look for when you're replacing a window? What is the best material for siding? What is, you know, like,
I like that. Like, I mean, you can get like an informational chunk on top of this, as in like, you know, and that'd probably be pretty, you know, clippable too, if that makes sense.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You keep it
reels,
to like a minute and a half. Yeah, exactly. Just five questions that you should ask every, you know, contractor that is coming in your house.
And that's the big networking thing that I want to set up with the rental side, obviously, like sending out. Some of these people are tenants of houses, so furnace filters need to be changed, gutters need to be cleaned, like those type of things that if we can get information out to them to get them more knowledgeable, that relationship I hope builds and grows over time, where then once they do buy a house, because I want all my tenants to own property. I don't want them as tenants forever, because I think ultimately the best thing for them is to own property, have their own thing. I'm just a means to their end goal.
Yeah.
So if I can create a good living environment here, when they go to buy their house, hopefully they will pull us into that conversation of like, hey, this new house I bought, the roof needs to get done. I got a quote here. I remember you sent out a newsletter when I rented one of your buildings. Would you mind looking over this thing? I would be more than willing to do that for anybody. Yeah. Like, that would be awesome.
Those are the value adds where you don't add cost, but you bring value, right?
Yeah.
So like it's little nuggets of that maintaining a loose relationship with them, right? And then, I mean, on top of just the repairs and that other side, you could pivot to like, hey, let's talk about what does your credit look like? What do you have for expenses? What is your debt to income? What is some stuff we can eliminate? And like, services like that to help them. Say we do have a rental and you have a long-term tenant that's been in there 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You'd be like, okay, no, you've been here this long. Would you want to stay permanently? Let's get you on a path to basically buying this from me.
Yeah.
It's a seamless transition. You don't have to move in or out, saving you costs there. I'm an agent. I'll only charge you X amount of percent.
Like, and you get some equity. And,
right. Yeah. Right. Yes. So like, I don't want to say I've struggled with this. My wife and I have had conversations about it, but like when you get into owning real estate and then renting, I don't want to do it to gouge or like make people struggle, right?
People
have to have a place to live. And if I can charge a fair amount and still be able to move on to another project or invest in another property, and then, like I said, after a few years, or if they're good tenants, then you pivot into then giving them a sustainable path to owning their own property.
Yep.
Not gouging them for as long as you can. Because tenants can see that too, just like we see with solicitors when they come into the door. Like, if they see that you're trying to charge top market rent, you're going to get a very, very small clientele that qualifies for that. But then they can know that and take advantage of that, right? They might trash your place or not take care of it as well, because they're like, hey, I'm basically paying this guy's mortgage and then some. And, you know, like, I don't know. I what is the word? Responsible, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
With you know, who you're dealing with. And like you said, I don't know who it was that we talked to earlier this season, but you're talking about when you have tenants coming in, they're people, right? And you want to know the reason why that they're in this situation. Let's leave you better than when we first met, right? I don't know.
Yep. It's just, and that transcends into even what we were talking about with contractors coming into your home. You know, if you have any inkling that they're viewing you as just a wallet, you know, yes, obviously that's their livelihood. They need to, you know, make their money and feed their family. But, you know, if you only have one bathroom and you're getting a bathroom renovation and that person doesn't realize that you might have to go to the gas station to use the bathroom, and that doesn't light a fire under their ass, for lack of a better term, to get it done. You know what I mean? And two, one thing just for while we're talking about contractors in your home, is it sounds ridiculous, but if you don't want contractors using your bathroom, get a porta potty.
Yeah.
Like, pay the $50 a month. Cause I'll tell you, we've had it where people have gotten really weird about bathroom usage, but it's like, you know, you're also taking on the responsibility of having people at your house.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't want people in your bathroom. You got to also remember that these are people too, that are working on your house. You know what I mean? And two, it's basically low level bribery, but we love coffee and snacks. That's for sure. people will, man, that's
if a 96 ounce box of Quick Trip coffee goes a long way.
Oh man, that is humongous. If you are appreciative towards the people that are working with you and letting them work, that's another big thing. I want the homeowner to be involved through the entire process, but you also got to remember, you know, I'm not going to stand behind an engineer while he's drawing up a set of blueprints and tell him how to do his job. You know, it's there's a fine line between micromanaging when you don't know what you're micromanaging, and then there's a fine line of being involved and in the know and wanting to learn why you're doing this kind of stuff. And, you know, that just comes down to kind of how you compose yourself. And I get it. I've had people work in my house. It is, it's an interesting thing. It's, you know, it's, you have people in and out, and, you know, there's messes being made. And, you know, as long as they respect your house and the area that they're working in, you should have no problem. You know, that's a big one.
Yeah. And I mean, more and more, I know we harp on the responsibility of the homeowner here and to educate themselves, but those are nuanced things that if you have not gone through the process, they will hit you mid-project. And what do you do when the crew comes the first day and they're like, hey, we want to use the bathroom? And the sales rep who didn't talk to the foreman, because you may never see the sales rep ever again.
Yeah, never.
They didn't illustrate that to the crew, and now the crew's here expecting to go to the bathroom, and now it's not there. Like, those things will get crossed, and now you have this tension, and the tension's going to last until the project's done. And no one wants that. The homeowner doesn't want it, and the builder doesn't want it. Like, both sides do not want that tension. And all that happens, it's a conversation before. But if both people, if the sales rep and the homeowner are too scared to ask those questions, it gets
or they don't know to ask
on
it.
Day
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
And what it do gets they answered say? On day one with the awkwardness.
Yep. What do they say? Small holes sink big ships. You know, little things pile up. And you know, that can be on both ends, big time. But you know what I mean? It's
I imagine having a crew of 4 or 5 people in your house, and it, like you said, it wasn't discussed that you know you didn't want them using your bathroom. And then you said it creates a tension, but If you don't have an option for them and you don't want them using your bathroom, then you're going to lose out on your project getting done as efficiently as you want, because then they have to leave the job site to go take care of business or, you know, like,
and
or having a place to just wash out materials even.
Yep.
So,
and that's, you know, that's stuff that you have to also consider, you know what I mean? And dumpsters, and, you know, that's a big one. And it's, I know nobody likes to look at dumpsters and have them in their front yard, but
yeah,
you know, we've had it, you know, I've had it inside jobs where, you know, the homeowner is like, you know, no, we're not going to get a dumpster. I'm going to be responsible for all of the waste. And I'm like, do you comprehend how much waste we are going to have? Like, not waste of materials, but like, it is unbelievable how much stuff you end up with. Building, you know what I mean? It's unreal, especially a demo. Like, if you're willing to take that on to save yourself $200, I don't want to, you know, it's not my fault that there's a pile of garbage laying in your driveway. You know what I'm saying? And just also be very conscious of the stuff where you're saving money, as if it's just a drop in a bucket. If you're spending $20,000 for a bathroom renovation, $200 isn't going to sink you for a dumpster. You know what I mean? Like, there are also small nuances throughout the building process that a lot of people that go overlooked, in the sense of your responsibility as a homeowner and then the responsibility of the contractor.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always open with, we've had some where, all right, we have to get a dumpster. Where do you want to put it? These are our options. And I'll have the homeowner tell me where they're going to put it, because this option comes with a fee. This option comes with dead grass. This option comes with you not parking in your garage.
Or so potentially crutching your driveway.
Like, yeah. Yep.
Yep.
And that's where it comes down to, like, what option do you want so we can complete our side of the project? There's going to be pain wherever we decide, but which one do we want?
And, you know, too, onto the quoting, when we were talking about, like, if you're getting gouged on a quote or not, the more questions and the more you're able to refine for the contractor what you want, the more accurate of a quote you're going to get. Hey, I want my basement finished. Okay. Like, what are we talking? The entire thing finished, full 1600 square feet, or is it going to be a livable 800 feet? You know, that's tens of thousands of dollars different. You know, you might be blown away when they're like, well, you didn't give us anything. Like, and then that just once again contractor starts to feel like the homeowner's unprepared. And it's not that the homeowner has to be totally prepared, but once again, you need to know what they're there to quote out, what work you need done, you know, have a pretty set line of what you want, your expectations. And that's where paying for a contractor comes in, because the contractor fills the holes.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. You're like, I want a bathroom with subway tile and a glass door. Well, they don't think about vanity placement, the code for how far a toilet needs to be off the wall, you know, a bath fan, green board in the bathroom because it's moisture resistant. That falls on the contractor. But Marcus, we've talked about in the past when we were doing client homes, is making them sign a blueprint.
Yep.
Saying, hey, we're agreeing to this. We've sat down and talked multiple times about that. We're all on the same board. And changes do happen, because it took me a long time to be able to walk through a house where all the walls are snapped on the floor to be able to envision what it's going to look like when it's built.
Yeah.
Most people don't have that ability. That's a trained thing, to imagine the finished product. You know, I've always called it the Pinterest paradox. Pinterest is a great tool to get you wanting color swatches, materials, like, okay, like the hardwood look, like that stuff. But you gotta also realize that a lot of the stuff on Pinterest is the most beautiful clickbaity.
Yes.
Not saying it's not impossible, but that stuff comes with the price.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
That's the best part, is like, oh, I'm pulling up this picture. They did this accent wall. And can you guys do that for $1,000?
Yeah, and you're like, that.
The lumber involved in that is more than $1,000. So yeah. Like, that's, we got
$1,000 in
right.
Nails.
Yeah.
Yeah. like that. But that's it. And you know, like I said, it's a great tool, but it's really easy as a homeowner to have. You know, what's the saying? What is it? Under promise and over deliver.
Yeah.
Right. You know, yes, that's a big thing in this business, you know, that it promotes success and, you know, having that mantra. But there are also times where it's like, you have to be honest with the homeowner, as in, your vision and my capabilities do not match up. And that's where the quoting process, that needs to be laid out. You need to show them your Pinterest picture during the quoting process, because I'll tell you, halfway through a renovation and you're like, hey, it doesn't look like this Pinterest picture. And the carpenter's sitting there going, I never saw that picture. Like, we could have completely avoided this. And now you're under delivering for their expectations.
Yeah.
That's why, like, for this whole thing to come back, be prepared as the homeowner, know what you want, lay it out, make a design sheet, have questions ready for the homeowner, and that is going to save you thousands of dollars, and that is going to make the contractor's job a whole lot easier, which means happy contractor.
Yeah. In that example, that happens even to me. Like, we had an electrician come through a property when we were going to flip it and turn it, came in, and his electrical bid was twice as high as every other person. One, he was a one-man shop, so it's going to take him longer. You found that out through questioning. Because I was like, okay, when you're doing this, who's going to be doing that? And he said, it's just me. And I said, okay, well, that makes sense, because now our time is going to go longer. I get it. And then he didn't have the scope of what we wanted. He had taken the blueprints, and he was adding things on that we didn't need him to do. Mm-hmm. So then it boiled back down into the reasonable part of where he was. He just quoted everything. Because like you said, when we send out the bid and say, hey, we need this done, he looks at it and he goes, okay, all the code, the missing code things I need to fix.
Every 4 foot an outlet. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So he's factoring in ripping up flooring or coming through the attic to drop a line down. It's like, we don't need to do that for that part. And then it boiled back down. But if I didn't have the knowledge of reading his quote and having the background of researching the questions on Google for the new person to know, like, it's not adding up and why is it not adding up, and asking the question of like, hey, I did get other bids, and yours is twice as high. Can you tell me why? Like, it might be a shock question. It might be awkward for the homeowner to phrase it that way, but I guarantee the contractor, that's not the first time he's been asked that.
Yeah.
And if you're coming from a place of not trying to be defensive about it, like if you're saying like, why is yours as high as it is? And say, I'm not saying you're outrageous. I just am curious as to why, like what makes yours two times as much?
Like, are they missing something?
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Phrase it in that way. What are they missing?
Right. Are they under quoting just so they can win the job and then run it up later? Right.
Change
so
orders.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And don't do any change orders until I sign off on them. Cause
yep.
I've heard horror stories about
breach.
That.
And we're going to give that as a little teaser. So everybody here listening to the show, Google change order
right
for the next contractor that comes to your door. So you're prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Add this to the quote. You do any type of deviation from this, you're not getting paid on it unless it's signed off.
Or, you know, what's a lot of people have written in is any changes after the agreed blueprint is a $200 an hour surcharge. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of guys will do that. Like, hey, we've agreed to this. And once again, it goes back to like small stuff most guys won't get caught on. You know, what ends up irritating me as a contractor is going backwards in time to achieve the same exact thing that we could have. You know, it's once again, there's a chart and it says it's like, you know, just an X and Y. And on the X, it's ability to make change. And on the Y, it's time. And right along the X, your ability to make change is the highest it'll ever be. And as time goes on in a project, it drastically drops off and then plateaus out right at the bottom of the line, basically saying you have all the ability to make change without it financially hurting you in the beginning of a project. Yep. That's why planning is so crucial, having all of your peas in a basket, making sure you know what you want once again. Because that's when it'll start to really cost you is when you are getting baseboard installed in your basement and you realize that, oh, the living room isn't as big as it should be or as I wanted it to be. That then is going to cost you. If there's a clause written into your contract that's saying that, hey, any changes that are massive like that in the finishing process are going to be a surcharge. You know, if somebody charges you $200 an hour and it takes them 2 days to get back to the finishing point, that's a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? And that's where you have to just know what you want. And obviously it's kind of ebbs and flows, but that's as much as you put into supporting your contractor, they'll give you back. You know what I'm saying? If you host very well and you understand that these people are here to do their job, they are also going to go the extra mile for you. You know, if you create a hostile work environment, it doesn't make people want to come back to your house.
Right.
You know what I mean? And sometimes, not in our case, but that can affect craftsmanship because they just want to get out of it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry, my dogs just went crazy.
Nope.
Yeah, no, it is so true. And it is planning. So, I mean, what we can give as a message to a homeowner that's going to get it in is plan. Google search, YouTube.
Plan.
They are going to be your best friend. Make yourself
knowledgeable. You know, if it's a good way to compare it to like buying a car. You know, that's most, besides a house, that's generally the first large financial investment somebody makes, right? Because, you know, you got to be mobile to get to work and stuff like that. Let's say you finally save up and fork over $15,000 for a car. You do a lot of research on cars, You do a lot of test driving. You feel out the different interiors. Oh, do I want four-wheel drive? Do I want this? There's nothing different about hiring a contractor for $15,000. Why would you just roll over and let them take the wheel, basically? You know what I mean? Treat it the same way. Do your research. Go on Angie's List and look at the contractors. And that's huge. It's basically car shopping for your house. You know what I mean? It's a lot of money and you should be confident where your money's going.
Yeah. More so. I mean, your house is at least an asset.
Yeah, and it gets
you're buying a liability with a car. You should do more due diligence with your house.
Yeah.
That's a good – I like that analogy. That's good.
Yeah. That's the way I've kind of ran it is, you know, and especially – and my dad also had, you know, another saying too, and I kind of hold true is if you are the type of person that has the ability to do a lot of the stuff on their own, you know, like me, my dad always says the other trades have to make money too. Basically saying, hey, you know, sometimes, yes, you can do it, but like the other trades have to make a living as well. Hire somebody to come in and set your tile. Yeah. Like, yes, you can do it. But like, if it really that finished look, you want it super crisp and you're a perfectionist, hire a pro tiler or, you know, I can drywall well, a lot better than I've ever been able to, but I'll hire out my buddy Danny because it's like, I could do it, but he can do it way better, way faster. Like, you know, and that's where it's like, yes, I could sit down there for days in mud and mud and mud, or he could just come over for 2 days in mud.
Yep. Exactly. Well, I'm gonna end it here. We're like over an hour, so I gotta cut it off at some point. Good leadership meeting, guys.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
No, I appreciate all the little nuggets you gave the viewers for like just home ownership and due diligence. That analogy, because like I never thought about it that way, but like if I was gonna go buy a car, the first thing I'd do is Kelly Blue Book.
Yeah,
there's no Kelly Blue Book for maybe Angie's List, like you said.
Yeah, that's about as close as it gets, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I would stay away from Kelly Blue Book, by the way.
What is it? Is it Black Book now?
There's NADA guides. There's Edmunds. There's so much stuff to look at, and I enjoy the car buying process because I don't like being taken advantage of. So, like, my niece is looking to buy a car. Just a really quick story. She posts on Facebook, "Hey, I'm looking to buy this car. I might need some help or whatever." And I messaged right away. I said, "Do not go back to that dealership without me. Where are you at in the process? What kind of car are you looking at? How much is it? What kind of financing? Blah, blah, blah." Went through all the details. She's looking at a brand new $30,000 Civic. And my first question is, well, why does it have to be an SI? Why can't it be a lower base, like an EX, maybe an LX? And then I said, "What kind of terms did you sign financing paperwork?" She's like, "Well, they did run my credit." I'm like, "Okay, well, now the clock started. If we're looking at other options, we have to either apply within X amount of days because of another hard hit." She's like, "They're offering me $687 a month for 84 months on a $30,000 car." And I said, "Look at the math at this.
Yeah.
This times this comes out to over $57,000 for a $30,000 car. Are you trading anything in?" "Yeah, they're giving me $500 for my trade." "Okay, well, first they're basically going to junk that. You could probably sell it. You could sell it somewhere else for $1,000, maybe $1,500. So that's a little bit extra money. Are you putting any other money down?" "No." "Okay. Well, first we need to find out what your credit score is, what the rate is that they're giving you. If you ask them for your rate, they have to tell you. If they don't, find a different car or find a different dealership first of all." So I'm like, "Don't do anything else. Let's figure this out. I'm willing to help you," right? And I just went through this last month with my wife's car. I went to the dealership. "This is the car we want. This is the price. I know this is what you guys, blah, blah, blah." And there was a little bit of tension because the dealer couldn't take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was like kind of pissed off or irritated. He's like a little bit huffy and puffy, and he's giving me all these reasons. "Well, if you want to get this car from us, then we have to go get it transported, and then we have to do a dealer trade." And
boo-hoo.
So I'm just like, "Okay, but do you want to sell the car or not?" That's what I mean. And I said, "I'm not trying to say this rude. Do you want to sell me the car?" "Well, you know, yes, I do. But this is what we have to..." "Okay, that's your process. I'm here. I'm willing to buy the car. Make it happen. Like, that's it."
Yep.
I don't like people being taken up. And even like my brother, he went to go buy furniture. I'm like, "Where did you go?" "Well, we went to Ashley and all these other places, or we went to Mattress Firm for a mattress. We spent $1,100. I said, "Well, you're an idiot. Like, go to Sam's Club, go to Costco, go to all these other options. You're going to pay half as much." Like, I don't like people wasting money. And it's not that I'm cheap. I just want their dollar to go further or not have to put out as much when they don't have to. So just like, it's frustrating. And even my brother, my other brother, he would go buy cars. I'm like, well, why did you buy a GMC Acadia that's 7 years old? And then he comes back like a month later, tells me I had to put $7,500 into it. I said, yeah, because you bought a GMC and they're known for transmission issues. Right. And so it's just like, dude, what are you doing?
Yep.
And it's just all these little things. And it's only because I know from experience, or like you said, doing the research. And I had a very bad habit from the time I was 18 years old to buying a car every year and a half, 2 years. And I was at a point where I was just rolling in that negative, rolling it in. And then I finally got to a point where I was clear and I'm like, okay, I can buy this car, zero money down, hit my preferred monthly amount. And then I was at a point where I was like, you know what? I'm always going to have a car payment. So it doesn't matter what car it is. If I want something new, I'll just go get it. I've completely flipped that. Like, right? You read a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it's like, this car is a liability. If you can get a solid running car, or it was Set for Life too by Scott Trench. But if you get a car that's reliable, you find a diamond in the rough. And I got like an older car. You guys saw it, but it's
yeah,
just like,
baby, that thing
gonna,
is so clean.
Yeah. I'm gonna baby that, and I'm gonna, like I told Leighton, I said this is gonna be your car in 6-7 years when you know starting to drive or learning to drive. This will be here for you because it should run that long or be able to take care of it. So I don't know.
Yeah, it all goes back to preparation, man.
Keep the money in your pocket. Yeah, a little bit of homework up front is gonna save you headaches and money in the long run.
I do like your idea though, Dan. Let's all three of us should talk about some Jerry knowledge, some clips.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that'd be pretty sweet.
Jerry's jewels.
That's our new segment. New segment on the podcast is Jerry's jewels.
Jerry's jewels.
Yeah. Little micro podcast, little micro videos. Yeah, let's do it.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate the time.
Yes.
Finally, we're able to make it happen.
Yeah, it felt good.
Obviously, if people want to get a hold of you, it is Justin@MVPRentalsLLC.net. If they want some of Jerry's jewels, email them.
Come on over. I got a whole treasure chest full of them.
All right.
Awesome. That's a great way to end the show. Very cool. We'll be back next week. And Jerry, we'll have you on again, I'm sure.
Let's do it.
We're going to go on. I want to do segments while we're into Cumberland. That's that new build that we were talking about earlier in the show where it's going to be more product management role for you as we sub out the framing of this. So I look forward to doing some on-site visits, maybe with subs or just like an in-field visit with the contractors. Maybe that's where we can start Jerry's jewels.
Right. We just walk through recording progress and say, hey, okay, they're doing this, whatever this build, this is what you look for. This is good. This is bad. It's what you want to avoid. Yeah.
Jerry's jewels starting soon.
Right. Yeah. See you in a few.
Good stuff.
All right. See you guys.
See ya.
Take it easy.